Okay, I call the Health and Social Services Committee to order at 3:05 p.m. on Tuesday, March 28th, 2023. We're meeting in the Davis Room 106 of the Capitol Building. Please silence your cell phones out of courtesy to others. There it is. And the committee members in attendance today are Representative Sumner, Representative Ruffridge, Representative Fields, Representative Mina, and myself, the chair, Representative Prox. And so we have a quorum to do business. I'd also like to introduce my committee aide, Chadwick Vance, our returning House Records Recorder, Sineva St. Clair, and Amanda Kraft, our teleconference moderator. We have three items on our agenda today: an overview of the growing the healthcare workforce pipeline, House Bill 57, emergency medical services review organizations, and House Bill 112, the profession of pharmacy. The first order of business is an overview, growing the healthcare workforce pipeline from school to career. And I'd like to invite, Missy Frazee, who is the director of the Career and Technical Education for the Anchorage School District, King Tech High School, to come forward to the table. She's online. Don't do that. You don't have to jump through the screen. So if you would just introduce yourself for the record and begin your presentation. And are we going to
thank you.
Someone to work the slides? Okay, please proceed.
Okay, thank you for the opportunity. My name is Mitzi Fraze. I'm the Director of Career and Technical Education for the Anchorage School District. We have nine or eight comprehensive high schools in King Technical High School here in Anchorage. And in my role, I do oversee all career and technical education programs that do include our healthcare pathways. I do have a slide, but I'm not sure if it's up. So now I see.
Someone
okay.
Yep, we're ready to go.
All right. The first part just introduces me. On the second slide, I just want to give a little bit of a background about our career pathways here in the Anchorage School District to give some context to what we, what pathways we have. We have healthcare pathways in five high schools that serve approximately 1,000 students per year. And our pathways include a three-year sequence of progressively more rigorous technical courses, that really build a foundation for students who might be interested in a career in the healthcare field. And that could be a career, that could be a CNA, or that could be a physician. It's really anything in that spectrum of opportunity in healthcare. Our programs all integrate HOSA, which is the Health Occupation Student Association, as well as guest speakers, employer panels, and we have CTE internship opportunities for our juniors and seniors. So really that falls within the spectrum of our work-based learning opportunities for students. We have capstone options for industry certification and dual enrollment in our program. At Bartlett High School, we have students who are seniors taking a pharmacy technician. It's a year-long course that prepares them to sit for their national farm tech certification. We have a biomedical innovations and research capstone at Service High School. We also have EMT and CNA capstone at King Tech High School. And then within our Alaska Middle College School, we have dental assisting, medical billing and coding, and medical assisting as options. So we have really a broad scope of pathways that can prepare students to enter into a healthcare career. And we know that healthcare is a critical need in our Alaska community, especially here in Anchorage. On the next slide three, one of the things I want to talk about is the opportunities we have on our horizon. both opportunities and kind of present some challenges, and I'll talk about where I see some needs to help programs like ASD, schools like ASD, and many of the programs across our state. Our pharmacy technician, we are right now partnering with Alaska Primary Care Associates in a grant, a Good Jobs Challenge grant that was awarded to Alaska Primary Care Associates. It's about almost a $10 million grant. And one of the things that we are aiming to do is to bring apprenticeships into high school. And federally registered apprenticeships can begin at age 16. And so one of our goals is that we begin our capstones rather than just being classes they take in high school, that we offer apprenticeship opportunities for our students beginning in high school to earn and learn. And what we need for that really to move forward is regulation changes. And that's something that our state really needs to look at in addressing healthcare, the healthcare workforce issues, is where are some of the barriers we're putting up to engaging youth in career development. We're also working with Providence, Alaska. They have been really responsive in our communication of employing minors in Alaska. We, and especially in Anchorage, our Anchorage Economic Development Corporation has highlighted that our out-migration in our community, the largest population leaving our community is age 16 to 27. That is our workforce, and that workforce leaving is not returning at the rate they used to. Maybe they go out for school and they come back, but they are not returning. And our largest demographic staying is age 55 and over. So a lot of those retiring, but we don't have a pipeline filling that. And so working with Providence, they really began changing internal hiring practices and policies to employ minors, which is, hasn't been a practice. They've been 18 and over. And really that work with Providence is really a model I'd like to see to be able to assist in other employers in changing policies to employ minors, because we really believe that if we help our youth the opportunity in our community for a career, that they have a higher likelihood of staying in Alaska because they see an economic opportunity, a social opportunity, and a career opportunity for them here. So those are big horizons, or big opportunities we see on the horizon to help expand our CTE programs and really take that work-based learning into high school and make it a core part of our career pathway development. One of the challenges, though, of scaling this, and this is really having the opportunity to speak to the committee today and really address where we need help as training providers in our state, is we really do have a lack of an interdisciplinary, coordinated cross-agency vision for workforce development and work-based learning in our state. And I think that my lens in the school district is you have 54 school districts in the state trying to figure this out on their own. And we really do often duplicate each other's efforts because there's not this state vision for work-based learning and workforce development. We also, the other thing is just the lack of data to measure and scale what we're doing. We often wonder, is what we're doing having an impact? Because ultimately, we want to see that our programs are helping to improve the healthcare workforce. And that's often difficult for individual school districts. You know, we're even the largest and have the most resources, but that's still difficult. So how can we as a state really do some cross-agency work to have better data that can inform inform our programs and make sure that we're doing the right work in our career pathway development? And then really the need for long-term resource development and policies to change and support the scale of work-based learning. And that goes back to things like policy changes, and if we had some form of interdisciplinary or a cross-agency group working together. Right now with the pharmacy tech, I'm trying to figure out how to navigate all that on my own. Thankfully, I have a contact, a personal contact on the Alaska Pharmacy Association who's trying to help me navigate. How do we look at that pharmacy technician regulation in Alaska that says 18 years old and a high school diploma before they can become a licensed pharmacy technician? So those two things automatically mean a student's got to get, they can be in our healthcare pathways, they can be doing all the learning, but once they have to wait till they have that diploma, and they have to wait until they're 18 to join that field. And in other states, they don't have those same barriers. So working with, I'm trying to work with those, the Pharmacy Association and the Farm Board to try to figure out, is that a regulation we can look at to say if students are in a register or pharmacy technician program that they can do those. So having some policy change and support that helps organizations to really address some of the barriers we're identifying to career pathways for youth, as well as work-based learning across the nation is really a huge emphasis on in career and technical education and really program development. But work-based learning requires resources. It requires, within my organization and ASD, we have to have people to support students in work-based learning. If it's going to be quality work-based learning experiences, whether that's an internship, an apprenticeship, a job shadow, we need to make sure that those are quality experiences, and we need people tracking those experiences, making sure there's supervisors over the students that throughout the process. And so that takes resources to support that. And so having really maybe the slide five is how what I would really like to talk about today is really how can the commission and help us. And that's really looking at examples from other organizations like the National Governors Association and Jobs for the Future that really have examples of systems that really are high functioning systems, workforce development systems that have cross agency participation between business, education, government, all working together to really address our critical workforce shortages and then really funding for education and workforce development. Because I think these are critical problems we need to solve if we are going to analogy and stop the bleed of these students, these young adults who are leaving our community at a very high rate. We need the workforce here in our community. And this is how I hope the commission and our legislators can help us be a part of solving the problem.
Okay.
Thank you.
First, I have to announce that Representative Sadler joined us at 3:08, and we're glad for that. And do we have any questions? Representative Mina.
Thank you, Chair Prox. Through the chair, I first just want to thank Missy for your presentation today. I actually did the PCA course at King Career Center before it was King Tech, so I really appreciate all those different workforce opportunities for students in the school district. I just have a couple of questions. Number one, what are like the top three careers that students are interested in pursuing with apprenticeships or other programs?
Through the chair to Representative Mia, are you talking in general or healthcare specifically?
Healthcare specifics, please.
We have several. Right now, we have 22 students in our pharmacy technician program at King Tech. We've asked the teachers how many of those are interested in that as a career, and about 30% of those students are interested in that. I don't have hard data to tell you what percentage of students are interested in the other careers. One of the things that I think also is important in the apprenticeship and career pathway is that it might not necessarily be their long-term career, but it is their entry into a career pathway. And even within pharmacy, that could be the entry into a degree, a pharmacy degree, and working with the University of Alaska Anchorage that now has a partnership program with the University of Idaho, having those pathways there. And for many of our students, apprenticeships, we have talked to our students about internships. And oftentimes our students won't take an internship because it doesn't pay. And apprenticeships are the opportunity to have paying work experience, and many students in our community need that economic opportunity for apprenticeship. And really, our apprenticeships would follow the demand, the career demand, and looking at where the demand for careers are, like pharmacy technician or medical assisting or CNA.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the chair, thank you for that information. Another question that I have related to this, I know that with a lot of these different apprenticeship programs, they focus on those different entry-level positions in the healthcare workforce. So in our committee and in other healthcare-related meetings, we hear again and again about the nursing shortage. So I'm curious how these school-based apprenticeships fit into that pipeline to get people, let's say, to become a CNA and then in the long term become a nurse.
Thank you, through the chair, to Representative. Yeah, like our CNA, so a CNA is a core requirement of a nursing degree. It's part of their pathway. So for some of our students, having that CNA opportunity also gets them in front or ahead in that process where they've already taken our CNA program is a dual program with the University of Alaska Anchorage. And any of these career pathways and these apprenticeships could provide the certification that allows them to work while pursuing further education. So if the CNA is obviously the most direct path, but any of these others could allow or would allow for them to maintain exposure within the healthcare industry. And I think that's also when students are exposed to the industry and they take these entry-level opportunities. We talked with Providence about that. Just because, you know, they may come in as a pharmacy technician, but then their exposure within the hospital itself, then they start to learn all the other opportunities and kind of work in a well-run workforce system within a hospital or another organization. They'll have pathways within there to their in-demand careers like nursing.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the chair, I appreciate that added perspective. One last question. It's great to see that Providence is looking and has worked to help expand employment to minors. What types of jobs are these, and are other healthcare facilities also looking at employing minors as well?
Thank you, through the chair. There are several Providence is looking at, and it's really been community dependent. So they're working in Valdez, and they're working in Kodiak and here in Anchorage. Valdez and Kodiak are CNAs. That is what they're doing. Here in Anchorage, there are one of them is a room service attendant, is one of the positions they're looking for here in Anchorage. And what they're right now is this is the first starting point for them to work out the process and policies within their organization for onboarding and understanding what it means to employ. And as they saw in Washington, Providence up in Washington, they expanded those out in Washington. I think Providence here in Alaska is looking for a similar model to expand those out to other ones like a lab tech and here in Anchorage, we hope to bring CNA eventually in here as well. I really do want to commend Florian Borowski at Providence and Jamie Smith for the work because it's really been a big lift on their part, but a good model. We don't have many healthcare employers who are interested in hiring minors. So it is kind of a culture shift for the healthcare organization. I know Gloria with AHEC and out in YK, they've been doing a lot of work out in YK to address this too, and made a lot of good progress. Oh, she put that in the chat too.
Thank you.
Representative Sadler.
Thank you. To the chair, Ms. Fraze, very briefly, please, briefly, what kinds of jobs can reference to Providence changing internal hiring policies to employ minors in specific high-demand jobs? Very briefly, what kinds of jobs are those?
Through the chair, it was the three, the CNA at the two locations, and then room attendant here in Anchorage, and one other I can't recall off the top of my head is the first that they looked at in our communities.
I'm sorry, the feedback, I'm having a little difficulty understanding in the microphone, but that's CNA positions, you said? Okay, very good.
Yes.
Good. Another quick question, if I may follow up. You referenced that there's a lack of data on which to measure your progress. What data did you rely on in setting up these five programs for vocational education for high school students in the first place? How is it you decided that pharmacy tech and EMT and CNA and biomedical innovations were appropriate programs to begin with? What data did you rely on?
Thank you, through the chair. We look at general workforce data. So where is the demand? So you're looking at here in Anchorage, pharmacy technician is an in-demand living wage job, not family wage, but living wage. So you're looking at labor market data to judge where your program should align. It's the data to really say, after they graduate, are we changing that workforce data on the other side? Are we seeing, the demand for those jobs drop because we are putting the appropriate, our pathways are working, where the students are going into those fields. We can't see that change there and understanding how all our systems are working.
So through the chair, my question is, where did you get the data? Is this Labor Department, state, federal,
yes. Private? Several different sources. The Labor Department is one of them, as well as Anchorage Economic Development Corporation puts out a quarterly jobs EQ report that we rely on here in our community as kind of a what's here in Anchorage. So several, those are the places, yes.
So I hear you say Department of Labor Workforce Development and Anchorage Economic Development Corporation. Those were two sources for labor data, workforce data. Okay.
Other questions? I have a couple. You mentioned that regulation changes are needed. Can you elaborate on that a little bit? And are those changes in the works?
The change I specifically was talking about for pharmacy technicians, the regulation is that they, to be a pharmacy technician, a licensed pharmacy technician in the state, they have to be 18 and have a high school diploma. So if that regulation were to change in a way that would allow us to do apprenticeships in high school so they could begin working as a pharmacy technician in high school. Does that answer your question?
I think that starts it and leads into the next one. You mentioned that they are required to be 18 and have a diploma. And the first part of that is the age requirement. Is that a state labor requirement?
Yes. Through the chair, all states can set their own age requirements. Some states are 16, some states are 17, and some states are 18. So it is up to each state to set that age requirement, or in general, the licensing requirements for a pharmacy technician.
That is good news. And that's sort of something the legislature could look into. Yeah, I thought so. Okay. Employer assistance, the interdisciplinary coordinated cross-agency vision. You say the school districts are working on that. They're trying to figure it out on their own. What were you thinking about as far as cross-agency?
Apologize for the chair. That could be cross-agency would be where you have Department of Education, you would have Department of Labor, you could have the Department of Labor and Workforce and Commerce. So you have different agencies in, it could be K-12 school districts, post-secondary, that are collaboratively working together. Right now, informally, it happens a lot, but it is also a lot of repetition across those different groups, meaning, I could point out Trish Zelgis on here from MatSU. It's everybody trying to do all of this rather than a coordinated effort statewide to convene these groups together to accomplish this work.
Okay, thank you. Are there other questions? Well, thank you very much. I'm really glad to hear about this. This is something I've been very interested in and wondering about myself. What barriers can we take out of the way to enable the schools, private sector, everybody else to just proceed as they wish? All right, any other questions? All right, thank you. Thank you again. And do we have Hilton Hallock, professor of nursing and a director at Pacific University?
I think Andrea Androsko is actually doing that. She works on
Andrea. Oh, and I didn't finish the script. And Andrea Androsko, who is Alaska Pacific University's assistant professor. Andrea, could you please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your presentation?
Yes, thank you very much for having me. My name is Andrea Androsko, and I am an assistant professor of business administration, health occupation, and health sciences at Alaska Pacific University. And we partner with the Alaska Primary Care Associates Association to provide some college credits for several of their apprenticeships, which includes the billing and coding specialist, the electronic health record specialist, the medical administrative assistant, community health worker, the clinical medical assistant, a pharmacy technologist, and we just added a direct service provider for people with disabilities. And we have adopted those as part of our program because we feel that these align with our associate's degrees and our bachelor's degrees, and in some cases, some master's degrees in the long run. And so what we're doing is really trying to keep people in the workforce and also in Alaska for their post-secondary education, so they don't have to go outside to get their bachelor's degrees or their master's degrees in health occupations, but yet they also have an opportunity to start out a career straight out of high school and be making some money and building their experience. And then they can come back. If they attend one of the programs that we provide credit for, they can come back after receiving those credits for the apprenticeship. They can come back the next year and take credits to get their associate's degree. And when they're ready to come back for, you know, to progress their career down the road, they can come back for a bachelor's degree in health sciences or through our business department. Both of all these programs align with both of those. We also have healthcare management courses that we teach. It's a concentration for our students. And we are interested in, I guess, working with as many organizations as we can to encourage this kind of scaffolding that allows people to have a career and work their way up the ladder over a longer period of time than typical 4 year, just, you know, going to college, go to, you know, graduate and come back. We find that there are many people here in Alaska who just, they can't commit to that 4 year for a variety of reasons. And so we're really, really trying to build this out so that we can provide more options to our students to stay, look at staying in state rather than going outside of state. So that's all I really wanted to say, but I'm happy to answer any questions.
Okay, thank you. Do we have questions? Representative Mina.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the chair, I've had a lot of really great conversations with some nonprofits in my district where we have a lot of immigrants and refugees, and I know there's been some frustrations with trying to help new immigrants and refugees enter, get registered for college if they're interested in an associate's, because oftentimes they'll have a high school diploma that's really difficult to get from their home country. And so being able to register to classes is another barrier. I'm curious if APU is doing anything in that area to help new immigrants and refugees get registered for classes.
I believe that we do have some processes in place so we can verify international diplomas. I know that we have some international graduate students. We may have a few international undergraduate students. So I know that is something that we are able to do. And I'd be happy to pass that on to Hilton as an ask to see if we do have those systems in place. It certainly seems like that would make sense.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the chair, I appreciate that response, and I just have a quick follow-up. Is that process, if someone is trying to, let's say, submit their diploma, is that, do they have to have like a physical application, or is it like a digital process to get registered for classes?
We have online registration, but you can also make appointments to come onto campus to talk to our admissions team, and they can walk students through the process of registering for classes. We try to do as many hands-on assistance opportunities as we can, because we recognize that that can be a difficult step for some people to take if they're not familiar with technology and working with online registration and that sort of thing.
Thank you. One last follow-up. Do you also have language assistance, or do you help any prospective students with like translating documents, et cetera, to help them get registered as or become a student?
I'm afraid I don't have an answer for that question, but it is one that I can certainly follow up with and get back to you on.
Thank you.
Representative Sadler.
Thank you. Through the chair, Miss, I can't, Andrea Andarco, I can't read your last name, I'm so sorry, but you know who I'm talking to. I'm just curious, if someone's going to go through 2 years to get an associate's, if they've got kind of the vocational aspiration, that's their goal, is this the classwork they would do the same as if someone did the first 2 years en route to a four-year degree? In other words, if someone does their two-year associate works, decides they do want to complete a four-year degree, do they have just 2 more years to do, or must they kind of plus it up somehow?
Through the chair, thank you. We do have it set up so that students who are obtaining their associate's degree are working their way towards a bachelor's degree, so they take the same courses that they would take if they were a four-year student. So it makes it very nice for students to be able to stop out at that associate's level for a while, but then come back and not have to take classes over again. That's something that we've been working on over the last several years, and you know, making sure that we're not providing too many different pathways for students. We're really working hard on trying to create one solid pathway that has opportunities to step out and restart.
And a follow-up too, through the chair, Ms. Androshko. Very good. I'm just curious. I know that you are at Alaska Pacific University, and you are a wonderful university and wonderful system. I've worked with some graduates of your programs that are great. I'm going to ask you a question about the transferability of those first couple of years for associates between your fine institution and the other one just across the way, the University of Alaska Anchorage. How easily can someone who got a two-year degree from your program transfer to UA and get a four-year degree?
I don't know about transferring to UAA. I know we transfer UAA to APU very easily. So my sense is that we're fairly compatible both directions, but I'm afraid I don't have an answer for that.
appreciate that's good enough. Thank you.
Representative Fields.
Thanks to the chair. Just wanted to convey appreciation to APU for standing up this very innovative pathway program, which I think really opens the door for more working class students to have a college pathway. So it's great for our diverse districts and workforce.
Okay. I have one. Again, thank you for your program. This is good to learn about. Do you are your programs open to high school age students, or can they get credit both ways?
We do have a program called Early Honors that works with high school age students. I think it's similar to the UAA middle college program. As far as these apprenticeships are concerned, I believe students have to have a diploma in order to enter into these, or a high school diploma in order to enter into these apprenticeships. But we certainly do have some opportunities for high school students to take some college courses through APU.
All right, thank you. And you said you're working with the Alaska Primary Care Association. Are you working with any other groups, I guess, in sort of that same field? I'm thinking, now I can't think of the names, but for home care and different aspects of that profession.
Well, we, APCA is the only partnership that we have at the moment. I would be open to working with any other organization that has apprenticeships if they align with our programs, or if there's programs that we can legitimately scaffold into further programs.
Okay, thank you. Representative Fields?
Thanks to Representative Prox. If I understand correctly, the Good Jobs Challenge grant that APCA and AHA applied for means that more of these apprenticeship opportunities will be accessible to hospitals and long-term care facilities. So APU will end up being a training provider opportunity. Actually, the University of Alaska is too, as the hospitals that choose to enter that program leveraging APCA's infrastructure.
And could you repeat the name of that challenge grant?
I think it was the same one that Missy Fraze mentioned earlier. The Good Jobs Challenge grant will be, again, expanding these apprenticeship opportunities to more of our hospitals.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions? All right, thank you very much, and we wish you success and continued growth in the program. Let's see, next I would like to invite Gloria Burnett, who's the director of Alaska Center for Rural Health and Health Workforce in the Area Education Center program at the University of Alaska Anchorage. Did I get the right name? I did, I think. Yes. So please introduce yourself for the record and begin with your presentation. Looks like we have a technology issue. Are there any? Are there any opportunities in the technology field as well as the? We're having a bit of a technology problem. We will take a brief at ease. Okay, back on record while we're figuring out the technology. We also have Trish Zug. She is the Career Technical Education Program Administrator for the Mat-Su School District. Trish, please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your presentation.
Yes, thank you, Chair Prax and the committee. You can hear me okay?
We can hear you just fine. Thank you.
Okay. Okay, thank you. So I am Trish Sugg, Matt Serbro School District's Career and Tech Ed Program Administrator. I will also, for full transparency, I also sit on the Governor's Workforce Investment Board, as well as the Commission on Post-Secondary Education. I come to you to talk to you about my work with our school district, as I oversee, as Missy does for Anchorage, I oversee all of our career and tech ed programs. I'm going to try to be brief. I know we have a shortage of time, but I'm going to tell you about our programs, then I'm going to tell you about some needs. I'm kind of following your themes here, and then I'll open myself up for questions. We currently have a health pathway. It's one of our 8 pathways. We have 6 programs under that pathway. We have our flagship CNA program. Our CNA program has been in existence for 20 years now. We are board certified. Our students, we can graduate up to 80 students a year if we're at full capacity. We have 2 RNs that teach that program at a high school level, which is fairly unique in the state. I think we may remain the sole single secondary level provider for that. And we're very proud of that. We do our clinicals for that at Providence. We do it at Maple Springs now. We've done it at the Pioneer Home. We do it at Prestige Long-Term Care in Anchorage. And we do it at Matsu Regional. So wide exposure for our students that do clinicals and then go on to, of course, employment and internships and pre-apprenticeships at all of those facilities and then some. We have a farm tech program, a dental assisting, and 3 of our programs are I don't know if I'd call it a need, but capacity for instruction, FTE, instructors for biomed, EMT, and health informatics, which is your billing and coding. So that's our growth potential. The good news is our Houston High School just opened, that many of you might have seen on the news after earthquake, and we will be employing a full healthcare instructor up there. So lots of opportunity there for growth, as well as we are a sub-recipient of the Good Health or the Good Jobs Challenge grant, and so we will be looking for opportunity there to do some expansion in our instruction, as well as work with a employ a work-based learning coordinator to make those connections that Missy talked about, and I'll mention that as a need and a great need of ours in just a minute. We also align to HOSA. We have had one of the state advisors for that, and she's working diligently to put that conference on this coming weekend, the Sheraton. If any of you want to see an amazing opportunity, although I'm in administration now, my background is teaching, and I'm very passionate about my work with young folks. And so if you ever go to one of those, we just had Otto, a side note, in Anchorage, it's life-changing for students, and it does change their trajectory. So lots of opportunity for you to see what's going on there at the Sheraton this coming weekend. We do have dual enrollment aligned to college classes through our CNA, our emergency medicine, our farm tech, and our dental. So we align for quite a few dual enrollment college credits. Our growth potential that we will be working on are behavioral health assistants, PCAs. These are all labor market informed. I put in the chat some of the labor market studies we've done with both the Matsu Health Foundation and Hanover Research, as well as the trends and the Department of Labor statistics to go along with that. Physical therapy assistant is another high need area, and we stand ready to deploy that better because we do have a program of study. But again, we look at that capacity to increase our instructor capacity here real soon, and that'll be one of the areas. Apprenticeship-wise, and all of these have potential to lead to apprenticeship. That's the work we will work on more intently with the Good Jobs Challenge, also with a work-based learning coordinator that can do that work on the daily. But again, another piece with that would be your surgical techs, another high need within the hospitals. I would like to also tell you that our CNA program, of course, is board certified, so our students do come out of high school, many of them come out with these credentials that are also occupational endorsements offered at the post-secondary level, but we're happy that our students are race ready in pharmacy, dental assisting, CNA, et cetera, and then also race ready to interject and go seamlessly into post-secondary programs. One such growth that I can expose to you is that we have had students that have reported back to us. One is a doctor right now. She's serving in the Air Force on Elmendorf. She was one of our high school students that took place in part of our CNA program, where stereotypically people would say, oh, that's those positions for entry level, advanced entry level. Yes, but it's informative to the fact that when she did her fellowship, her residency, and was interviewed by practitioners for that, they noted on her resume and wanted to know about her CNA program out of high school. She wrote back to the instructors and said how important that trajectory was to her career. We have 2 farm tech students that went through our high school program. They went through a baccalaureate program, and they are now involved in the Idaho State partnership that takes place at UAA, and they are now in doctoral programs to be pharmacists and serve our community in Alaska. And so, again, just please understand that the spectrum is very wide for CTE, from advanced entry all the way to doctoral programs. Our work-based learning spectrum is anywhere from guest presenters all the way through to those formal apprenticeships, internships, practicums, and clinicals. So I like to talk about where we intersect there, but again, in the scope of time, I will hold that off for questions. The last thing I will address is some of the needs. Again, that work-based learning coordinator is more important than ever. When we sit on the side of training and we're doing all that work diligently, and then we have labor, Missy kind of talked about it, and it's been a pretty good conversation of mine in all of the conversations I get to have around workforce, is that when we connect those systems seamlessly, we have opportunities for our students to enter into these apprenticeships and this employment at a more productive rate for the state of Alaska. And those connections are made not by happenstance, but very intentionally. So my goal is to break funding with the Department of Labor. We even used to have some of the, I guess I'll call them job coordinators out of the job centers that were on site at East High School, I believe it was, and King Tech, don't quote me on that, but the notion of is location, location, location. When those job placement experts were on location, where we're putting out these graduates, we're making daily connections and daily conversations. And again, I kind of gave you a short litany of the heavy partners that we deal with for clinicals. We had our student CNAs doing clinicals in Providence Hospital during COVID. So we're proud that we have been able to prove that our young people can be race ready and navigate employment, even in the highest critical times, such as during COVID. I will stop by saying also one of the before the legislature is a House Bill 31. It's a modernization of the APS scholarship. The APS scholarship was designed to bring the brightest and best and keep them in Alaska. Again, dealing with the out-migration, and it's very important. And I will tell you that one I have my eye on, because it has an opportunity for us to allow our local students to use those APS funds in a more modernized fashion as we look at how they can be used, how long they can be used, and what institutions. So just as I highlighted the Idaho State program, it sits on UAA's campus. Those students never leave Alaska. They do their clinicals, they do their practicums in Alaska at facilities. But as they sit as Alaska residents right now, they are not allowed to use their APS money, which I'm sure that they could all be it would be very useful in a doctoral program. But just the legislation around APS doesn't allow for those partner programs, even though they're physically in Alaska. And I feel like they're going to meet our need to keep those best and brightest in Alaska. So with that, I will end my testimony. I'm glad to take any questions.
Okay, thank you. Representative Fields.
Thanks to the chair. Thanks, Ms. Sugg, for being here. And did I understand that some of the Good Jobs Challenge money is supporting this work-based learning coordinator for the Mattsu Borough School District?
So through the chair, Representative Fields, each of us as subrecipients, secondary partners had to be in on the grant, and so that secondary meaning high schools, and we had the opportunity to kind of articulate our scope of work that we would use with our piece of that budget. Again, for us, it's about $300,000 over 3 years. So again, if that's going to be amazing for us. It will not afford us a full-time work-based learning coordinator, but that's where I'm going to prioritize our money, because I know we stand ready with some very high quality programs. We're proud of those programs. I know the state is ready for those young people to be employed and get on their ladder, career ladder. But that missing piece is the intentional conversation. So I plan to use some of those funds for what I would consider a partial or a part-time employee to work on those intentional conversations. So yes.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. And I might wonder if some of this $3 million that the House Finance Committee added today for CTE could augment that and potentially allow some districts to have a full-time work-based learning coordinator. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Vina.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the chair, I just want to thank you for presenting on a lot of the great work that the Mattsu Borough School District is doing. I'm curious, in terms of these programs, it's great that we have so many students that are participating. Are there any vacancies there? What does that recruitment look like? And I just ask that in the context of, you know, I know there are some schools where we have less career counselors that are there, but there are great programs that are available. There are just some students that, because of their lifestyle, et cetera, they don't know about it.
So through the chair, Representative Mee, I believe. I'm sorry, I'm looking through the screen here. Thank you for that question. It's a wonderful question. We are actually actively engaged in a marketing campaign when we did to get federal funds for Career and Tech Ed. The Perkins Act or Perkins Law requires you to do a comprehensive local needs assessment. Through that assessment, we found from our community, all of our stakeholders, scripted, so it's parents, students, counselors, practitioners, agencies, that they do in fact need to know more about what's available and how they have access to it. So I do invite you to look at our Natsu Grove School District webpage, and if you go to the CTE department, you'll find a nice, fresh, wonderful videos, testimonial from CNA students, testimonial from instructors, programmatic information, our programs of study. We do correspond with every single one of our high schools about their offerings, and the one thing that's a little bit synonymous with Anchorage and some of our other districts throughout the state where we have tech centers. We do deploy CT in all our comprehensive high schools, and then we have a magnet program for the programs that are facility rich or instructor rich, such as the CNA program where you have to employ by board regulations, state board of nursing regulations, RNs with certain credentials. So that lab and those exist at one central location. And then we save spots for high school students across the district. So we try to address equity and access. And I will tell you that we're working towards a higher rigor in our district, which has asked us, we're asking students to be engaged more in school. And we have upped the graduation requirements. And I find that as opportunity for us to be have students more engaged in all those classes. And the dream is that one day our best problem to have is that we are prescribed for all of those classes and you know, some in the ebbs and flows, but certainly some of them are at capacity in some areas of our career and tech ed, and some still have openings. But we feel like we're doing a pretty intentional effort. As a side note, I will be presenting to our assembly and school board tonight, and it is absolutely bound for your question, and that is making sure all stakeholders know what's available and how to engage.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the chair, that's really great to hear about the investment and outreach that the school district is doing. I have another question, and this might be both for Ms. Zug and for Ms. Fraze, but I'm curious how you work with students and their class schedules. I remember being in high school, and you know, I knew that there were different, you know, apprenticeship opportunities out there, but I had AP classes and they were scheduled in a way where I couldn't make it work with my schedule. Do you work actively with students, like maybe freshmen and sophomores, so that they're able to take on these career opportunities moving on to their upperclassmen years?
Sure. Through the chair again, Representative, we have the luxury of having a brand new space and time and every day called the Four C's. It's at the end of Tuesday through Friday in our district. It is college, career, community, and credit. The time is very intentional so that all of our stakeholders, all of our instructors are engaged in transition planning with students and their 4-year mapping out of their high school. And so that's a whole nother layer that's very new to us, but the usage of that time is amazing for those of us that have always pined to have more time in career development and schedule building, so that we're not having a counselor that has 300 plus students having to navigate that conversation. Everybody's invested. And so in that time, part of some of the things we do then when we work with our students is also now they know the programs ahead of time, so they're not waiting to be a senior and say, oh, I wish I would have known that was offered. How did I fit it in my schedule? We help them backwards engineer so they can fit the career and tech ed classes that are very relevant to them in their schedule. And then we look for flexibility in how our traditional academics are also fit in there. So I think what you're referring to is those of us that went through a traditional model and you got your math, science, English, social studies, whether they were in context or not on your schedule. If you had time left in that sixth hour, then you looked and saw what was offered and that's what you took. So we're very intentional and backwards, and particularly in our Matsu Career Tech High School, which is a pathway model high school. It is intentional that every student is invested from day one. I'm very careful not to just, even though they're amazing school and they are pathway model, we deploy this across our district, especially now that we have that Four C's time. So yes, intentional that all students will visit early and often about their scheduling and how to get in. We have summer intensives, even in health occupations. The idea is that those are our younger students. We partner with our federal programs, so migrant ed, IEA students, Indian ed students, can take at a young age, 8th grade, 9th grade, 10th grade, a summer intensive. They're just focused on health occupations. And then the idea is that we would then help them script their schedule for the rest of their high school if that, in fact, was something they want to continue with. So I'm really doing a little more hand-holding there. So I think those are a couple examples of where we are really trying to be much more intentional.
Thank you.
In the scheduling.
Okay. Other questions?
I'm curious, Mr. Chair, if Ms. Fraze also had a follow-up or any addition to that question of how these apprenticeships work with high school students.
I think through the chair, I think scheduling is always the challenge with students. And I think Matt Sue is doing really phenomenal work with the four C's. One thing that Anchorage is, the Anchorage School District has through our school board goal for college career and life ready, really the goal that all our students graduate college career and life ready, is the strategic vision of career pathways for all students. We really do not engage in that for all students. Those students who choose a CTE pathway, that's less than 50% of your high school students. But really making that for all students and helping to inform them. And the Anchorage School District, what I would say, is going through a really transformative process right now that is engaging our industry, our businesses, our community partners, our teachers and students to really say, what does high school, what does school need to be for our students to really prepare them for life after high school? It's very different than life was 30 years ago, and our education system needs to be responsive to that. And so I would say that if I was going to point to anything in the Anchorage School District, it really would be that transformation we're undergoing right now.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Burnett. Did not get that right. I lost my place.
Because I messed you up. Can you hear me, everyone?
Hear you. Yes.
Oh, wonderful. So my name is Gloria Burnett. I apologize. I'm in Nome on a site visit to one of my regional centers. And it's kind of ironic that being out here in rural Alaska, I have unique challenges, being the same thing I'm about to talk to you all about, unique challenges of rural Alaska when it comes to health workforce development. I am the director of the Alaska Center for Rural Health and Health Workforce. And I operate a federal program funded through the Health Resources and Services Administration, known as the Alaska AHEC program. AHEC stands for Area Health Education Centers. These funds are dedicated to statewide health workforce development. They exist in almost every state across the nation. But there's a special focus on rural and underserved communities. Reason for that, most of our healthcare providers are trained in urban settings. In turn, they do their clinicals in urban settings, and they're more likely to work in urban settings, which leaves us with a major distribution problem in regards to our healthcare workforce. So we're seeing that in Alaska for sure. We're seeing it across the nation. And the AHEC program is really dedicated to getting more people from rural communities, especially youth, interested in healthcare pathways so that they can then pursue those career paths and return home or pursue those career paths, which is where apprenticeships really help, if they could pursue those paths close to home and remain home. And be able to work in their home communities. They're more vested. They're more likely to stay long term. They care about their communities. They're committed to their communities. And they're the ones that are going to be retained as healthcare providers out there in rural Alaska. So I'm here in Nome right now on a site visit. We have a couple different things going on. And just as an example to highlight the different things that the AHEC program does, we run camps, we run intensives, we run whatever we can in whatever format works for rural districts. One size fits all models are not going to work for rural Alaska. You already touched on the scheduling issue. It's very hard for us to run distance programs due to internet and difficulties like I experienced earlier today. And it's difficult for there to be health science educators out here in rural communities. It's hard enough to find those types of educators in urban settings, let alone in a rural setting. So the AHEC program is able to support those efforts by having these different types of intensives, camps, dual credit courses, whatever works best for that rural district and their scheduling. We have one going on right now here at NACTEC, where we have students from all of the Bering Strait School District villages coming in and getting a 2-week health intensive. Then they'll return home and then they can come back for other sessions over the course of the academic year. So it really gives them an ability to stay close to home, which combats homesickness, it improves retention, and gets them through those programs. In addition to that, we've really been trying to promote all pathways, not only these youth pathways are great. And the Good Jobs Challenge has been mentioned time and time again over the course of this call. It is an excellent opportunity for us to expand our pre-apprenticeship Path Academy work that we offer through the AHEC program. I know there was a question earlier as well about English language learners and immigrant populations and refugee populations. We actually have Path Academy specially designed for those populations. And these are 3-week long intensive programs that provide a variety of entry level certifications and skills to really get these students their first foot in the door for exploring healthcare and professionalism skills. It's a slew of different things that they're really doing to better prepare them for those entry level positions and those apprenticeships. So it's really a pipeline pathway straight from these academies into their respective home community apprenticeships that are being grown. And I chuckle, Representative Fields and I, when he was working for the Department of Labor, we were knocking on doors trying to get hospitals and healthcare clinics to think about the capacity for apprenticeship in healthcare. And they looked at us like we had multiple heads because that's not for healthcare, that's for the trades. But we've come such a long way in terms of the healthcare community accepting and embracing apprenticeship. And the Good Job Challenge, in my opinion, is going to get us over those final humps and to that final finish line where this is an embedded pathway that is an alternative. Because I will share with you all what I shared with the Labor and Commerce Committee a few weeks ago. Even if we tripled our healthcare professions right now, every graduate that we make out of the state of Alaska, if we tripled it at this point, we still would not be making enough healthcare providers to fill the vacancies and the future need that we're seeing in the state. So we really have to attack this from all angles. The beauty of the AHEC model is it's really providing that extra support to those most rural and remote communities that otherwise wouldn't have these opportunities. And so we're capitalizing off of what we're building in the urban centers, and we're bringing that out to those rural sites so that they have access as well. The other really neat thing that I'd like to share, we had some extra COVID funding that was awarded to the AHEC through the Department of Education that we were able to use specifically for middle school programming. And I want to just highlight, I hear this time and time again, we do not start young enough. We do not start talking about careers young enough. And as soon as I got some money that was provided that I could work with any age group. I didn't have federal limitations where I couldn't work with anyone under ninth grade, or I had to work with non-traditional adults. When I had free rein of the audience, I went straight to middle school. And it has been so well received by all across the state. We've been running middle school programming, and it's a precursor. It gives them a taste. It gives them that hook to get them latched on and interested so that they have a better idea of what they want to do, what they're interested in, and what they don't want to do, and what they're not interested in by the time they get to high school. So I just want to pitch that because it's been so well received and the money is limited. It's going to be ending this year. We're not going to have that money in the future. So that means we're not going to be doing this outreach to middle school students after this year. I would hate to see us lose that momentum. So I would encourage you all to think in that line too. If there's more that we could do to start younger, I think it's got a huge benefit to the students in terms of when they start thinking about what they love, what they don't love, what they're passionate about, and what they know they really don't want to take part in. So that's in a nutshell. I know we're running way over, and I know I wasn't able to connect initially when I tried. But there's lots of great work happening. Everybody that's on this call presenting to you are partners of the AHEC. We all work really close together, and we do our best to make sure that that rural Alaska has access to the same opportunities in healthcare workforce exploration for youth that our urban centers do.
Okay, thank you. Representative Fields has a question.
Thanks to the chair. First, thanks for the great work you do, Ms. Burnett. And my question is, I don't have a sense of how many students who might be interested in entering healthcare careers are currently reached by the AHEC versus how many could be reached. In other words, how many students are we not yet reaching because AHEC doesn't currently have capacity? And if there is a significant group that we aren't reaching, how do we best reach them so they're aware of the opportunities?
Yeah, I can kind of give you an estimate, of course, but what we're doing right now, we have federal funds that we are utilizing. And right now, out of my 6 regional centers I have throughout the state, only 2 of those centers have more than 1 person staffing them. So I'm talking massive regions. Here I am in Nome. My center's located here at Norton Sound Health Corporation. 1 center director that's dedicated to reaching Nome, Kotzebue, and Utqiagvik and all of their outlying villages. And he does a phenomenal job. But if he had more staffing, if he had more capacity, he could double, triple the amount of students that he's reaching right now. And that's just one. I've got 4 centers like that that are just a one-person show. I do have an annual report that I can provide you all with as follow-up context to this, as well as a one-pager that highlights some of the capacity. If we had right now, if we had more staffing in those regions, we can go from about 1,500 students a year to about 3,000 students a year that we'd be reaching. And that's healthcare exploration activities, dual credit activities, working intensively with these kids. This isn't just like a presentation in a class. This is 40 hours or more of work with these kiddos that really makes a difference and makes an impact, and it inspires them. And that's what I've been witnessing this week, being here and seeing these kids from, Shaktulik and Reving Mission and all of these small communities coming in. They would never have ever had that opportunity had it not been for the AHEC putting that on in partnership. We partner with NACTEC. We partner with all the regional centers, Philly Sogvik. We're partnering across the board. We're not trying to do it alone. We're a partner-driven organization. But the partners are relying on us to provide that expertise. And right now, I cannot meet the demands that I have. I've had to turn away Ninana this year, had to turn away Galena, not for lack of me wanting to, but I simply did not have the instructional capacity to send instructors out to those communities to be able to do that good work. So we're doing the best we can. We're stretching as thin as we can possibly stretch, but more investment, especially at that middle school level, will be able to help us meet that demand that's already there.
Thank you.
Representative Mina.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the chair, thank you, Gloria, for the work that you're doing with AHEC. I'm curious, what percentage of applicants get approved to get into an apprenticeship program? And for those that don't, is there any additional outreach to make sure that they can get placed at the next, I guess, application cycle?
Through the chair, Representative Mina, it's hard to give that statistic because every single apprenticeship has their individual host organization and they all kind of operate their own way. I know that we are producing over 250, I would say about around average 250 Path Academy participants that are successfully completing the Path Academy per quarter. Like, I'm looking at my quarterly numbers and that's what I'm seeing. So by far right now, we have more pre-apprentices than we have apprenticeships set up. But the good news is, even though they're not necessarily going into apprenticeships, they are still getting hired in very high need professions like direct support providers. We have at the end of every Path Academy, there's always a mock interview session where we invite local providers that are hiring and their HR departments to come participate. And I can't count how many times students get multiple job offers at the end of that period. So it might not be that they're directly entering an apprenticeship because we're still kind of building up that momentum, as I mentioned earlier. But they are getting hired, and they are getting hired into high-need, high-turnover jobs like direct support professionals that we really are working on trying to fill. We can't fill them fast enough, and they're difficult positions. They're not easy work. You really have to have that compassionate, healthcare-oriented heart to be able to succeed in those roles. And the good thing about the Path Academies is it's preparing them. It's not sugarcoating anything about what's about to happen and what this work entails. So all of those are really byproducts. Even if they're not going into apprenticeship, they're still going into the workforce or they're going on to higher education. And they've discovered something that they're interested in that they want to pursue, kind of that career ladder model that we've been talking about as well.
Thank you.
Any other questions? I have one. It could be for any of the presenters. How much does your enthusiasm for what you're doing contribute to the success? Thank you very much. And we'll take If there are no more questions, okay, we will take a quick at ease and get ready for the two bills. Thank you again.
Thank you for this opportunity. We appreciate it.
Okay, back on record, our next order of business is House Bill 57, Emergency Medical Services Review Organizations. And with us, we have Representative Wright and his staff by Jordan Randall at the table. So please introduce yourself and bring us kind of a brief overview of your bill, and then we have some testimony.
Right. So, members of the committee, Chair Prox, thank you and good afternoon. For the record, my name is Representative Stanley Wright, District 22. I'd like to thank you for the second hearing of HB 57. We currently have Mr. Brian Webb online, and he'll be able to answer any questions that you have. We got a brief overview that my staffer, Mr. Pai Ridden, will be able to answer.
Go ahead.
Through the chair and for the record, my name is Pai Ruden Randall, and I will read the sectional analysis on House Bill 57. Section 1 amends AS 1823070 to include EMTs, dispatchers, and paramedics in the definition of healthcare provider for the purposes of peer review protection. Section 2 amends the definition of healthcare provider in AS 1823070 to include EMS agencies and employees who are conducting peer review activities. Section 3, AS 1823070, is amended to include emergency medical services agencies, or EMS, and employees under the definition of a peer review organization.
And did you have any invited testimony for this?
Mr. Brian Webb is on the line just to answer any questions, and he could also testify again if you'd like, but we didn't have any folks that wanted to testify.
Okay, I think we'll move on. At this time, I'd like to open public testimony. And is there anyone in the room that wanted to testify on House Bill 57? Sir, please come forward and introduce yourself for the record, and you have 2 minutes, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Mark Johnson. I live in Juneau. I'm currently retired. I support the legislation, urge its passage. And I'll just give you a brief background. I was chief of community of EMS in Alaska from 79 to 2004. The last 4 years, it was called Community Health and EMS. And back in those days, we promoted quality by testing, by continuing education, by refresher training, and by physician medical oversight. This legislation will take quality to the next level, I believe. And I also, since I've retired, I've done a little bit of healthcare consulting, and part of the time it's been with the American College of Surgeons Committee on Trauma. So I've had the opportunity to observe some of the trauma peer review activities where you get, for example, trauma surgeons, emergency physicians, anesthesiologists, nurses. They get together, they review a case, and they determine what did we do, what went right, what could we do different next time, et cetera. This will allow that process to be extended more to the pre-hospital EMS services. If you think about emergency medical services, a lot of the responses are time critical, and a lot of the decisions have to be made in a relatively short period of time. And in that situation, it's always very, very good to have an opportunity afterward to go back and look at, you know, did we do a good job? Is there something we missed? Is there something we could do better next time? And I believe this legislation will really help move in that direction. The only other thing I'd mention is it's kind of fitting that this is in the Betty Davis room, because I remember about 13, 14 years ago when she co-sponsored trauma system legislation in this state. And that legislation actually passed bipartisan in this legislature, and it contributed to improving trauma care in Alaska. So thank you for your time.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Johnson. Are there any questions? Okay, thank you. And next on my list, I have Mr. Gene Wiseman from Anchorage. Mr. Wiseman, are you with us?
Hello, Mr. Chair. This is Gene Wiseman from Anchorage. I work for the Division of Public Health. And actually sitting in Mark Johnson's old chair as section chief for rural community health systems. I am on only on for questions at this point, not for testimony.
Do you have any questions for us? Okay, thank you, Mr. Wiseman. Is there anyone else in the room that wants to testify on House Bill 57? And anyone online that wants to testify on House Bill 57? Okay, do we have any questions for Mr. Wiseman? All right, we're good. With that, I will close public testimony. And I don't know that we have this. Briefies. Okay, we're back on record. Mr. Vice Chair, I would entertain a motion to move House Bill 57 out of committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move House Bill 57, version 33-LS0335/alpha, from committee with attached individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal note.
Are there any objections? Seeing none, House Bill 57 moves from the Health and Social Services Committee, and we will take a brief at ease to sign the paperwork. Okay, back on record, and our last order of business today is House Bill 112, having to do with the Board of Pharmacy. And Representative Ruffridge, would you introduce yourself for the record and give us a brief update on House Bill 112?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Justin Ruffridge. I am the representative from District 7. And thank you for a second hearing on House Bill 112. This bill is a bill that adds statute changes after a multiple-year process for regulatory update with right touch regulations at the request of the governor. We went through many pages of regulations and as a result discovered there were a few areas that needed statutory changes. So this was the work of the chair that served the Board of Pharmacy prior to myself, then myself and the current chair, Dr. Shaver. So this is multi-year, multi-chair, multi-board process to bring this bill to the committee and ultimately hopefully to the body so that we can continue that right touch regulations project and ultimately finish that hopefully in the next little bit of time. So thank you for hearing it again and certainly hope to earn your support.
Thank you. And
I've got a question.
Representative Fields has a question.
Thanks to the chair. We heard a suggestion in this workforce hearing a few minutes ago that it would be helpful for work-based learning programs for farm tech apprentices to be able to start work, say, when they're 17 years old instead of waiting till they're 18 and while they're working on a high school diploma as opposed to finishing a college diploma. And am I correct in understanding that that would simply require the pharmacy board to update their regulations, therefore we would not need to adjust the bill before us today if that was a goal that, you know, some of us thought was meritorious?
Yeah, that's correct. I think through the chair, Representative Fields, the current regulations for pharmacy technicians state that you have to be 18 years of age and have a high school diploma. The statute does allow the Board of Pharmacy to control licensing regulations for pharmacy technicians, and it is something that the Board of Pharmacy has discussed in the past. If there's barriers to that, I'm not aware of any other than just having the board adjust that regulation. So I know that Dr. Schaber, I think, is online currently. So, you know, whether or not she has anything to add to that, potentially she can chime in on that.
Dr. Schaber, are you with us, and do you have anything to add?
Through the chair, this is Dr. Schaber for the record, and to Representative Fields, just to reiterate Representative Ruffridge's comments, I was listening earlier, and the change that would be requested would be a regulatory change, so it would not require a statute change. So no modifications needed to the bill to address that issue that was raised.
Through the chair, if I could follow up, that's great to hear, Ms. Schaber. And is this an issue that you would be interested in taking to the board for consideration?
Through the chair, Representative Fields, this is Dr. Schaber for the record. Absolutely. I think that there's already some discussion in the works about it. And I think that the board should support changes to optimize the workforce and increase training for our pharmacy technicians. So definitely, I think it's something the board could and should consider.
Okay. Through the chair, thank you for considering it.
And it sounds like there's lots of enthusiastic people ready to help provide more students for that program. So we're hoping for success. Thank you. All right. Any other questions from the committee? Okay, so at this point, I would like to open public testimony. And is there anyone in the room that would like to testify on House Bill 112? Seeing none, we'll go online. It looks like we have several people that wanted to testify. First, Dwayne Wood from Anchorage. Mr. Wood, are you with us?
Hello?
Yes.
All right. Well, good afternoon, committee members. For the record, my name is Dwayne Wood. I'd like to vocalize my support for House Bill 112. I'm a lifelong Alaskan and a current third-year pharmacy student with a history of working with rural emergency medicine on Prince of Wales Island as a volunteer EMT. I'm currently working at Bernie's Pharmacy here in Anchorage and plan to work in Alaska as a pharmacist after I graduate. Working at an independent community pharmacy, many of these changes will directly show in our workflow, improving our ability to serve patients and the community as a whole. I'd like to give a short story, though, real quick. Tied to both why I decided to pursue a healthcare career and the direct importance of epinephrine. During a school trip back in high school, I learned that a friend of mine was deathly allergic to a nuisance common here in Alaska. This nuisance is commonly known as the no-see-um. These pesky little bugs leave bite marks all over the arms of many of us during the summer months, but in her case, it resulted in anaphylaxis, an extreme allergic reaction, and a medical emergency. The ambulance was called, but without the EpiPen that my chaperone was carrying, she may have died or had permanent damage, especially considering how long it takes for medical services to arrive, sometimes here in Alaska. One of the things that this bill does is increase access to EpiPens in Alaska by allowing pharmacists to prescribe this life-saving med. This can be important for fishing ships, men and women spending days in the water with minimal access to health care. It will save the lives of people like my friend. In a state like Alaska, with so many of us living rurally, every single minute can count in an emergency. And it's especially important that we equip our communities with what they need to save their loved ones. There are many aspects to this bill that will benefit the public and the pharmacies, bringing our practice in line with other states. But this is the aspect that most excites me personally. Again, my name is Dwayne Wood, and I urge the committee to support House Bill 112. Thank you all for your time. What questions do you have?
Are there any questions for Mr. Wood? Seeing none, thank you, Mr. Wood. Next online, we have Amity Winberg from Anchorage. Amity, are you with us?
I am, yes.
Okay, please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Amity Winberg, and I'm here today to ask for your support and consideration of House Bill 112. I am a third-year pharmacy student in the Joint University of Alaska and Idaho State University Doctor of Pharmacy Program, as well as a constituent of Representative Dan Sadler in Chugiak. I have lived in Alaska for the last 20 years of my life and have worked in both community and hospital pharmacy settings. As a result, I can see how this bill will positively impact patients in every setting in which a pharmacist may serve. In all aspects of my pharmacy training, patient safety has been at the forefront of the conversation, being the impetus for a number of new health initiatives and bills such as House Bill 112. An important part of those conversations is the recognition of hearing diversity in perspectives, including parties who have not traditionally held authoritative positions in healthcare. Creating a board of pharmacy seat for a pharmacy technician aligns with this goal and ensures multiple viewpoints can be represented, making dialogue more rich, more inclusive, and more meaningful. Additionally, House Bill 112 increases patient safety by ensuring the Alaska Board of Pharmacy has the ability to regulate the qualifications not just of pharmacists, interns, and technicians, but also the entities who manufacture and distribute the drugs used on a regular basis in community pharmacies, hospitals, and patient homes across the state. Lastly, House Bill 112 will increase patient access to epinephrine auto-injectors by clarifying that pharmacists may prescribe and dispense this crucial and life-saving medication. For those who have witnessed a severe allergic reaction in progress or experienced one themselves, you know that few things are more terrifying than seeing someone realize too late that they have been exposed to something deadly. Perhaps this person is a loved one or even your own child. Their alarm is evident as their airways are closing and they struggle to breathe. Without receiving help soon, they know they are potentially minutes away from death. Knowing we can prevent anaphylaxis-related deaths such as these by making epinephrine auto-injector prescriptions more accessible, why would we not support the ability of trained pharmacists to provide this service? I want to thank the committee for your time and willingness to discuss the significant impacts and implications of House Bill 112, and I would like to implore you for your support as we consider new and innovative ways to improve healthcare in Alaska. Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have any questions for Ms. Winberg? Okay, thank you, Ms. Winberg. We'll move on. Next, we have Barry Christensen from Ketchikan.
Yes, this is Barry Christensen. I'm a practicing pharmacist at Highland Pharmacy in Ketchikan. Our family has owned and operated our pharmacy for 49 years. But today I'm here on behalf of the Alaska Pharmacists Association. I'm the co-chair of the legislative committee, and we're here to proudly announce our support for HB 1112. And for the record, I'd like to recognize what Representative Ruffridge reiterated earlier, is this bill before you has been the work of the past several boards and represents a lot of hard work, a lot of futuristic looking at pharmacy and keeping us going in the right direction. And I appreciate Dr. Shaver's current leadership in this role. And again, we support this bill and ask you for your support today. Thank you very much.
Very good. Do we have any questions for Mr. Christensen? Seeing none, thank you for your testimony. And next on the list, we have Scott Watts from Juneau. Mr. Watts, are you with us?
Yes, I am. Hi, my name is Scott Watts. I'm calling from here in Juneau and pharmacist in support of House Bill 112. As a pharmacist for the last three years here in Juneau, I can attest to the many changes that the practice of pharmacy has seen. And see this bill as a collaboration of many smart, dedicated individuals working very hard to allow practice of pharmacy safely and provide modern pharmacy services to help improve the health of Alaskans. A couple things I'd just like to emphasize that the bill does, maybe reiterate, the change or adding a pharmacy technician to the board. Pharmacy technicians are essential to the practice of pharmacy, and they deserve a seat at that table and to be recognized as part of this profession. They really do help and
provide a true service to pharmacy. One of the EpiPens providing that access is huge. That's been mentioned enough here, but that's a true life-saving possibility for many different situations that we can just decrease the layers of healthcare that it takes to get to these EpiPens that people can have on hand. Not as exciting, but this also ensures the Board of Pharmacy the powers to support the Drug Supply Chain and Security Act, DSCSA. We as pharmacists need to be assured that the medications we purchase are for our patients in the state of Alaska are safe and true. So this will be rolling out the end of this year, and this allows the board to update their statutes for that. Again, I just ask for your support in this bill and hope we can move it forward to help promote the board mission for the Board of Pharmacy, promoting safety and welfare of the Alaskans. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions for Mr. Watts? Thank you, Mr. Watts. Is there anyone else online that wishes to testify on House Bill 112? Is there anyone in the room that wishes to testify on House Bill 112? With that, public hearing is closed. Are there any comments from the committee on House Bill 112? I would just like to make a comment. I appreciate the work that has gone into this, and it is needed. A son of a friend of mine died from a bee sting several years ago, and now it turns out that no-see-ums are a danger as well. So I'm not sure I'm ever going outside again. But no, that's very important. It doesn't happen that often, but it does happen often enough that we need to think about it if we're wandering around in the backwoods or the backyard. So thank you. Are there any amendments that need to be offered, or are we ready to
let this? Pass it.
Let's pass it. Let's do it. All right. Mr. Ruffridge, I would entertain a motion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move House Bill 112, version 33-LS0600/alpha, be moved from committee with attached individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal note.
Seeing no objections, House Bill 112 moves from the Health and Social Services Committee, and will take a brief at ease to sign the paperwork. Okay, thank you for that. We are back on record. Are there any closing comments from committee members for the good of the order? And with that, the House and Social Services Committee is adjourned at 4:45 p.m.